Today's presenter is Christy Kane. Christy joined the IBM Software Premium Support Delivery Team in January 2007. She has expertise in Webster Application Server and Webster Data Power SOA appliances. In this capacity, she is providing client-focused operational guidance and technical assistance. Prior to this role, Christy worked in technical support for Webster Application Server, diagnosing different problems with our clients in a 24/7 environment. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Christy.
Well, thanks, Elijah, and welcome to today's Webster Technical Exchange. I am going to go over problem determination troubleshooting for the Webster Data Power SOA appliance. So I will try to randomly let you know what slide I'm on if you're following along, and if you're not on the web, if you're not in the e-meeting. So how's that go? Here we go. The agenda, I'm going to go over troubleshooting the different utilities and stuff that are available on the Data Power device, a quick little scenario on using some of the tools, and then the resources available for you. So to get into the meat, that would go on to slide 3. To give you a quick little overview, to make sure everyone kind of level set, the Data Power SOA appliance product line is made up of 3 different devices. The first one is the XA35, the green box. The second one is your XS40, your yellow box. And the third one is your XI50, the blue box. They do inherit the properties of the other ones. So the yellow inherits the properties of the green, and the blue inherits the properties of the yellow and the green. So they do progress in functionality. All three boxes do come with a web GUI or command line interface, as well as a SOAP interface that you can use to administer the box and configure the different things. They are least expensive to most of us. Expensive, least functionality to most functionality. So, to get into the main gist of the program, it's troubleshooting. Those main tab links to general high-level debugging panels, and it contains features required to set up different utilities so that you can troubleshoot your problem on the device. So data power problems, you can categorize in three different areas. They are related to configuration of your services, like the files that are referenced in processing, rules, style sheets, whistles. And the second area would be firmware, you know, whether or not the firmware is actually giving you the behavior that you wanted it, if it does happen to have a bug in it. And then last would be hardware, right? You have to remember the device is an actual physical piece of hardware. So they might be configuration, it could be firmware, or then in the end it could be hardware. So when we get to that section, that would be where you'd have to get, like, data center people involved. You start with an area and eliminate each area one by one. Generally, you want to start with your configuration, then move to firmware, and then move down to hardware. You can use the web GUI or the CLI, and then some of it will generally depend upon what type of problem you're seeing, right? Whether or not you might kind of jumpstart one. If you can't really access the box at all, you kind of might want to jump to hardware, versus if it doesn't give you the expected result, then you would start with your configuration or your firmware. I'm just going to show all the tools using the web GUI. I do have one or two screens on the CLI, but all the utilities you can use doing the CLI. So if that is your preference, then there is a CLI reference guide that you can download and use for that. So the best way to begin is always to do a process of elimination. Slide 6 is configuration and firmware. So when you're starting out, the logs capture information generated from the messages passing through the device. So your system log actually logs basically almost everything going through the device. So it's always the best place to start. So as soon as you think it has a problem, that would be your first place to start when you're looking at configuration and firmware. You try to accurately state your problem, right? So you kind of want to make sure that, to help narrow it down, you want to make sure that you really sort of understand. Some people find it easier to write it down, so, you know, kind of talk it over with somebody else, but this will help you narrow your scope of your investigation. So as soon as you kind of can give your clear problem description to yourself, even whether you're talking to someone else, yourself, that kind of thing, you really want to make sure that you really know what you're talking, that you understand where the problem is, whether or not you go, okay, I didn't get the results that I wanted, I didn't get a response at all, or nothing happened when I hit the button, kind of. So that can help you determine basically the appropriate tool to use. There are, you know, several available. So once you can kind of do that, you can sort of pick the tool that does work best for you. So then once you pick the appropriate aid tool, then you want to try to repeat your test, right? Reproducing it, rerunning it, and then looking at the tool to see if it gave you any more helpful information. So you always want to make sure you apply the right tools for the right job. On to slide 7 is checking the system log. So this is the system log, like I had stated before, is your primary source, right, for all information. You can do it by domain, so the default domain will capture everything if you actually have access to the default domain. A lot of administrators on a box will actually not allow developers and stuff into the default domain, but if you do and you looked at the system log for the default domain, you would basically see every message generated. Now, if you're in your own domain, developer or business unit kind of domain, it contains generate message by just that domain. So whether you ran a firewall or multi-protocol gateway, you would want to make sure you drill down into the area that you're really looking for. So there's some filtering that you can do. You can do that filtering based upon object or category to help you cipher the information that it captured, right? So the log can be really, really big, and using those filters can help you narrow down and sort of determine the amount of information, right? So there are some a log level that you can set, which is on the next slide, that actually help you kind of narrow that same information. You do have to be careful with the system log because there's only very limited space on the data power device, right? Because it's a flash drive. There's no hard drive in a data power device. So it can roll on you. So a lot of people like to write a log off box using like SNMP or syslog to actually capture more of the log. So if you have a lot of developers working, you might have to be careful that your log doesn't roll on you. The other thing that really helps when you're looking at the system log is that transaction ID to help you track that one request. So you can double-click on an actual transaction ID and pull up just the system log basically for that transaction ID. So if you are working in a, you know, multi-developer kind of environment, more than one person is running stuff through the box, you want to make sure you're tracking your transaction ID and that you don't kind of cross over with somebody else. And then you have to also be careful with your system log because it can fill up your available storage space, and then this will prevent the system from writing any more information to the log. So if you happen to go into a system log and go, oh, no, it's not writing any more information, then more than likely you have filled up your storage space. And then if this can, it can actually help prevent the system from processing messages. So it's another place to look, too, if you do have if it is heavily used or the box is being heavily hit, that, you know, and you're going, okay, well, now it's not processing any messages, you do want to check your file space to make sure that it's not full, because if it is full, then nothing's going to be written to your system log as well as no messages would be processed on the box. So slide 8 is a way to look at the system log. There are multiple places in by multiple, I mean probably 4 to 5 different places that you can go in and pull up a system log, right? There's a navigation on the left-hand side. You can do a system log from there. You can do the front main web GUI. You can pull up the system log. You can pull it up from the policy, the probe, the troubleshooting panel. The snapshot on this window is from the policy and the little view log sort of right there after the export. So this is where I had drilled down into a particular firewall, went into that policy, and then went into view log. But sometimes that can be better because you did get down to where you want to look, right? So you know the firewall and stuff that you're having trouble with. So it can make sure you're pulling up the correct system log. And then down there at the bottom, you'll see the filtering piece. So this would help you do content-based filtering to help you narrow down what you see in that overall system log. And then the other thing you have to remember when you look at a system log is that you want to make sure you read it from bottom to top. So unlike WebSphere or some of the other application server kind of products where you read a log top-down, in DataPower you actually read the log bottom-up. So when you use that filtering option, it helps you zero in on your problem, and it does change what you see in that log window, same way with the transaction ID. So now on to slide 9, which is kind of the next step. So this was the first step that you did, was you checked your system log, you saw what kind of errors you were having or, you know, what was going through. So now after you've kind of done that, now you want to ask yourself a series of questions to help you narrow it down. So you got the system log kind of in front of you, and now you kind of can step through it, like I said, bottom to top, to say, okay, did my multi-step processing begin? Did I hit any of my processing actions within a right policy, you know, within a policy? And then you can see what rules were selected. So when you're stepping up, you know, basically from the bottom to the top, you can ask yourself these series of questions, right? You can look. You can see what service was selected. You can see what matching rule was selected. You can see what processing began. So you can just, you know, did the right rule go? Well, no. Okay, well, then you can go back and see what your match action might be if you were expecting a different rule to be selected. Did it go through all the actions that you were expecting? Now, then once you get through that, now you have to think about what your processing actions did. So did it alter the message? Did it reroute the message? Was it supposed to transfer something or decrypt or encrypt? So now what actually took place on your message, right? So if you didn't really get the result that you wanted, what took place on that message? So if this processing action began, but then you didn't get the result you wanted, what takes place inside that processing action? And then the last three set of questions are knowing where your message is going to go, right? So generally when data power is in the mix in an infrastructure, you have a set of, you know, it's going to come into the box and then it's going to go somewhere, right? Or the box itself, sometimes it's self-contained, right? It hits the box and goes back out. But sometimes you're passing it down to MQ or off to, you know, WebSphere, WebMethods, or down to a database. So you really want to know where it's going. So then this is where you have to sort of ask your off-box kind of questions, like did it go to the back-end server? Did it receive the connection? Did the server actually get the request? You know, and then did the device receive it, right? So maybe the client didn't send it in correctly. So kind of where it came from and where it's going are the last sort of three headings. So, and inside of this, when you kind of step through these things, this is also where you would start asking yourself if the problem can be reproduced, right? So the one crucial piece of information in the troubleshooting process is whether the issue is occurring on or off box, right? So that's a big deal because you don't want to be spending all your time troubleshooting it on the data power box if the issue was off box. You know, the request might never be reaching the appliance. There might be a connectivity issue between the appliance and one of the more of the back-end system targets that you were headed to. So the goal is to start at the client and then go step by step to see how far the request or the response got. So, you know, if it was a response, you want to start with the back-end server and work your way forward. Or if it starts, you know, if it's a request, then you want to start your client and, you know, work kind of down the line. So making sure that, you know, each person in that line, whether it was the client to the data power to another system, each person got the information they needed, and then what did they do with that information? So slide 10, these are a list of all your troubleshooting utilities that are available on the data power box. So these are all those, you know, tools that I mentioned before that can aid you in trying to figure out where you might work on it. The first four, the set log level, multi-step probe, packet capture, and error report, are your top four, right? These are the ones that are used the most. These are the ones that if you had to open up a PMR with support, they're really always going to ask you for an error report, that sort of stuff. So these are the top four that you kind of want to go. And then based upon the other things that you're doing or the other ones can, you know, really come in helpful. So when error occurs, the log will be written to possible errors may be related to the schema, validation, back-end, or front connection. So the best tool to use initially when the problem occurs often depends upon where in the project you are, right? So, for example, if you're in the development phase, you might want to start with your system log or probe. But then when you get into the test phase, you know, it might be the error report, right, taking that error capture. And then, say, production, that might be checking the system usage for load and the work list and the object status. So that's the other thing to consider when you're trying to figure out which tool might be helpful is which cycle in your development life cycle are you in, you know, developing, testing, production, Q&A, regression testing. So that can actually help you try to figure out the right tool to use and when. So to go on into talking about all these different tools, we're going to talk about the first one, which is the set log level. So this is, I mentioned previously before, the set log level actually determines the amount of information that is captured in your system log. So usually in a development kind of area, you're going to be running in debug mode. You want the most information possible. Now, when you get into testing, you might narrow that down to warning or error, then even in production you might want to narrow it down further, right? So you got to think that for every request that's coming in, the system log is going to start capturing messages. So depending upon the log level that you have set, it captures, you know, more and more information. So if you look at the little drop down on the right hand side, you'll see a list of all the log levels. And then what you have to think about is when you pick a particular level, like here I've got debug highlighted, then you get all the levels above that one. So if you were to pick error, then what you would get was error, critical, alert, and emergency. But then if you, you know, so compared to debug, where you're going to get them all. So that's the other thing you want to consider when you're looking at the different phases is in a system log, you know, if I didn't get enough information, then you might want to check the log level, right, to see where it was set. Because if you were expecting a warning or a notice or something, but it was set to critical, then you wouldn't get that. So, but then you also have to think about that file storage space and make sure if you're filling it up or that you're writing it off box or something like that. So that if you need all the level of the debug for development and, you know, even if in production you need to quickly run it to sort of see if you can help narrow down the problem and see what's taking place, you just want to, you know, make sure that you kind of go back and maybe reset it. I generally don't recommend running in debug mode in production. Generally, I usually say warning or error so that you're only getting the, you know, really important information. You know, and some of that can just be based upon the load that you're running through the box. So each priority captures an additional layer of messages. So, you know, it's that added information that you would want. When you set the level to either info or debug, you will see a blue troubleshooting enable notice appear in the web GUI to let you know that you are in debug mode and capturing the most information. The lowest priority is emergency, with the highest priority being debug. And like I had mentioned before, you can write logs either on the device or off the device. And if you wanted to write them off the device using syslog, SNMP, you can encrypt or assign them for additional security, right? So if for like production instance, let's say you really need auditing or you need to keep all that history, you can write the log off box and you can do it in an encrypt kind of secure fashion so not everyone can see all that information that's in the log. So the steps on the slide do take you through actually setting the log level. You can click on the troubleshooting icon in the middle of the little tools kind of cross. Then you look for the logging section. You select the level that you want, and then you just hit set log level. So there's no need to, like, restart a domain or, you know, restart the box or anything like that, like you have to do with some products when you change logging information. So once you sort of set the log level and rerun it, it should pick up those changes for you. Okay, now to talk about the Multiset Pro. This is going to be your most useful and helpful one, but it can also be your most dangerous. So you have to be careful, you know, where and when you use the probe. It's not recommended really to turn it on in production just because of the amount of information it does collect. The other note that you have to want to make sure that in a development phase that you're not turning it, everyone doesn't turn it on all the time, right? So because of the amount of information the probe captures, you can actually, you know, really slow down a box to actually causing a box to have to be rebooted. So if you're in a development box and you have multiple domains or you want to make sure everyone in every domain's not turned it on at one time, that you do turn it on and then turn it off when you're done, that you do limit it to whatever service you need it, right? If you only need it on the one, like firewall or multi-protocol gateway or web service proxy, that you turn it on for that one, you use it while you need it, and then make sure you turn it back off. So this one is an excellent tool for debugging during the development phase, right? Because it's a stepwise kind of debugging and analysis, right? It's going to give you every single step that your process, that your message basically went through, right? So that, you know, there it is a life cycle message as it passes through the device. So you're going to see it come in, you're going to see which firewall it went through, and all the different steps in that processing action that you had, whether it was one processing action to multiple ones, right? And you do have to keep in mind that it is called a multi-step probe. So if you don't do any multi-stepping in your rule, if you just kind of, it comes in the box and it's routed out, right, you might not see anything in the probe, right? The probe really is for multi-step. It is for that processing action when you take multiple steps and processing on a message. So it does reveal useful system variables. The multi-step probe allows you to view the data and all these useful system variables by a little icon. It looks like a little spyglass. So along with the rule selection, the action status, the input and output contents, right? So if in a processing action you used a variable, you can see what variable was the input and what was the output. So whether you were doing piping to kind of stream them down the processing actions, or whether you were kind of jumping, so in one processing action was taking the input where another one was taking a variable, you can see all that in the probe. So when you restart the system, it automatically disables the probe. So if you did have to restart your box or something like that and restart the and then you would go, oh, my, you know, I went on any probe data. You just want to make sure that you went back and that your probe was actually enabled. The service will only accept as many concurrent connections as the value of the transaction history field, right? So there is a certain amount of only information that will be logged. And the transaction history field appears when you click the service that has the probe enabled. So when you double-click in that on your firewall or whatever, you can see that transaction history. So, and I just want to reiterate, it's not something you really want to run in production. Now, there are some cases where, you know, the problem can only be reproduced in production. I can't get any more kind of system log. I changed the log level and I still didn't get any more. So if you have to run it in production, then you really want to make sure you're doing it on like a downtime, right? So, you know, in a very select window to turn it on, run it, and then turn it off. So you really want to make sure you're working on your throughput for that one. So now once you've kind of turned it on, right, and these are the steps on the screen that enable you to do that. So for a particular service within a domain, right, whether it's this example is a gateway, you have the drop down, you can see all the different gateways in your domain, and then you just click the little add probe button, right? So this one's from the troubleshooting panel. You can turn it on from a couple of different places. So this screen capture is really is from the troubleshooting panel. So now you have it on, you turned it on, you recreated your problem, and now you want to go into your, I want to look at it, right? Turned it on, I reran it, I think I reproduced my problem, now I want to see what the probe has, right? So you bring up the probe log, you can see the input and output and action detail selector, right? So that is at the top there, you'll see that spyglass, right? So you double-click on that spyglass, and another window comes up. And depending upon how many processing actions you have, you'll actually see more spyglasses. So if you click on a spyglass, you'll get even more information. So as you kind of step through, you can do spyglass to spyglass and see how the message kind of went. So you can see context information, the headers, attachments, local, global, and service variables, all the nitty-gritties, right? So any of those other, like, pinpoint information attributes that you wanted to see, you know, what took place, what variable had what output, what was used, when it was used, the probe actually will tell you all of that different information. So, and this is another one where it is good to make sure you're looking at the right transaction ID. So, there's a screenshot down here. If you click on, like, if you double-click on, like, the 8659, if this was your log, it would pull up another window and show you system log for transaction 8659. And you can kind of filter from here as well. So that would be another thing you want to make sure. So based upon the information you see, if you need to make a change, make sure you have the right level of service object firmware backed up before doing so, right? So there are some points in here before you start changing things that, you know, you'd probably want to make sure that you've taken a backup of things. So, and then the other note, just to keep in mind and to reiterate, right, if you have a service that doesn't do anything, if it just comes in and routes away, you didn't do any multi-step, the probe won't have anything. The other thing to note about the probe is, as far as priority handling, it's low man on the totem pole. So if you've got a box that is being heavily hit and a lot of things are coming through the device, whether it's development or testing, and you've got the probe enabled, and the probe didn't get any data, it could be because the system was working on all these other messages and the probe is last, right? So it's going to process all these other messages before it starts to capture probe data. So you can go in and change the priority of the probe, right? So you can increase to where you increase it to priority and therefore it would always log stuff to the probe. So, you know, if you're working and the developer next to you is running a bunch of stuff and you know that a couple other people have probe stuff on, you might want to go in and up the probe, right? Because then you would actually get information versus having to try to hit your probe or redo your test to make sure, you know, that you hit it where a window or would log. So it can be easier to just go in and up the priority of the probe. A lot of times in development, this is necessary just due to the nature of the amount of developers or whatever that might be hitting a box at one time. So that covers the probe. So the next tool is the packet capture, right? This is the most useful tool when you're troubleshooting network connectivity. So what you get is a PCAP, right? So, and this is the same PCAP kind of format that you're used with any other kind of packet capture, whether you've done them, you know, off of routers or in WebSphere or whatever. You get a PCAP, and then you can, you know, you can look at it with White Shark or Etherwheel or any of your other. There's a wide variety of tools out there that you can use to look at a PCAP. So, and this is where if you're not really good at PCAP and looking at that kind of data, then you might have to get like a network admin or, you know, a data center kind of person to, you know, read the packet capture if you're not able. So that's kind of working with that outside team. So, this is your TCP sequence or other networking level problems, right? So if you're not getting where you need to go or you didn't, you know, they kind of go, oh, I think I'm really slow. I wonder if I'm having trouble or if it didn't, you know, if the request wasn't coming in, you would turn on the packet capture. So the PCAP is stored in a temporary directory and then you can go into the file system and down, you know, double click and save it down to your desktop. This is the way you enable it for on the, through the web GUI. Now, a lot of people find it more useful to actually enable the packet capture on the CLI, which is on the next slide, 15. So when you use the packet capture in the CLI, it offers a, you know, a few more options to kind of give you a little bit more ease of use. So when you use the CLI command line interface to do it, you want to make you have to specify your internet interface, right? So whether you're ETH 1, 2, 4, whatever, where in the web GUI, if you weren't using the right interface on that web GUI, you know, you're going to get it wherever that one is. So the CLI, since you actually have to specify it, then you know you're in the right Ethernet interface. So sometimes people have taken packet captures on the wrong interface and then it shows no information. So like if support asks you for a packet capture to help you troubleshoot a problem, you do want to make sure that you capture it for the Ethernet interface, right, that you're really working for. And then to start and stop the packet capture, it is a simple, you know, little packet capture. You give it a file name, the duration, and the kilobyte. So, and then you can actually say, like, where you want it stored. So if you didn't really want it in the temporary directory, then this is where you could actually change that information. So you would, you know, you as soon as you want to start doing it, you go in, you do the packet capture, you start it up, whether you're using the CLI or the web GUI, you reproduce your problem, and then you want to make sure you stop the packet capture. So then you all, you know, you can set the duration if you want to only run for a certain length of time. You always kind of want to make sure you set your max size, right? You don't want it to get too big, one, because the box itself doesn't have that much file space. You don't want to fill it up. So you always kind of, that's always a really good rule of thumb is to make sure that you set them, you know, the max size that you want that packet capture to get. So depending on the problem, it can be yet better to use the CLI interface over the web GUI. So it's just sort of a give and take. A lot of people like the CLI, you know, just because it's a command line, right? So if you're having to work with that network admin who's used to, you know, AIX or Unix commands and things like that, they might really want to say, okay, look, I'll help you, but I want a command to do it then, or can you write me a script to do it? So any of those kind of scripting stuff, if you wanted to do a packet capture that way, would be done using your CLI. So the last not the last tool, but the last main tool out of the first four that I mentioned is your error report, right? An administrator can generate a verbose report at any time using this generate error report. So you go in here, it does go in the temporary directory again, you just hit the generate error report, and then you can actually send the error report wherever you want, right? Over to a server, to a particular location. If you're an admin and a developer wants it, you can actually email it to them. You can email it to support. So it's, you know, pretty easy. It is one of the main things that level 2 support will want. So, you know, you can go in, you can run it. It does give you all your running configuration plus all your system log, right? So you have one box that's behaving one way and you have another box that's behaving a different way. You can do the generate error report, take that running configuration and drop it over to another box and then see what's going on. If an error report is available, an icon appears that allows immediate access to that file. So you would see on the screen a little thing that says, you know, file available kind of thing, and you could then see that someone's already generated an error report. Since the report contains the current configuration, current contents of the system log, contents of the CLI log, you know, you'll really need this report when you engage that data power support rep in a VMR. So if you've had trouble working with support before, or you usually don't like that answer of when you open the PMR and then you get the support answer back of, okay, well, I only immediately need information or doc, right? So I always try to recommend, you know, if you know you're going to have to open up a PMR, generate this error report, and then when you send that email into support to describe the problem that you're having, go ahead and attach this error report and say, this is my problem, this is what I, you know, this is what I'm seeing. If you have recreate steps, those are always great to provide, and then go, then here's my error report. So it gives them that running configuration and log entries immediately off the bat, and they don't have to come back to you. So especially if you've just seen the error, you can do that, you know, or you've just reproduced it. So you don't have to go back and reproduce it if you've gone on by the time support gets back with you. I am now on slide 17, which is the TCP Connect tool. So these are all the other, these tools are just as useful as the first four, but not quite as heavy hit, right? They are more for a particular set of problems, right? So this is where when you're really narrowing that scope down, the next set of list of tools will really help you do that. So the TCP Connect, you specify the domain app, IP address of the remote host and a port number. So if you go, okay, I'm trying to go to this database or this WebSphere app server and I'm not getting there, right? I'm trying to get to MQ and I can't get there. Then you can actually come in here and do a little quick test to see if the box can get there, right? So if you're not sure if there's a firewall in between or, you know, if you've got the IP address right or anything like that. So it is really useful when you can't connect that back-end application server. You can just take, you know, quickly test that connection and then see, right, okay, I'm getting there, I'm not getting there, right? So you either get a, you know, successfully pinged or, you know, a failed kind of message, and you'll immediately know whether or not you get there. The next tool is your object status, and this one's really helpful to see which services, you know, might be down. You can bring one up. You can take one down off the page. If you want to look to see all of the different objects that a service is using, right? You can expand the different service. You can see all of the different objects that one is using. Now, you can't see the attributes of the object. So a lot of times the questions I get is, well, I want to know if this XML file is being used in what, right? The object status page doesn't give you that. So you can't actually sort of query the different attributes to see that, right? You can only see the objects, and then you'd have to go into the objects to see what the attributes of that object are. But it does allow you to see for a given service what's up, what's not. If sometimes it'll give you a little red, you know, text to let you know kind of if one's down, what might be the problem. You can see all the way over on the right-hand side, you can see the logs for that one. So if you kind of want to come in here, goes it's down, you can immediately get to the logs. You can change the view. There's two views. You can either do a service view or the type view. I have found the service ones were the most helpful because it really, most people know like what service you're using, right? What firewall, what gateway, what proxy, versus sort of the type that kind of, but both are sort of useful. It really depends upon what you're doing. And to get to this page, you know, from that navigation menu on the left-hand side, you go under status, and then under the main one, you'll see object status, and then this is the screen it pulls up. So it's a really, another useful one. down to slide 19 is the audit log. Now, the audit log is more for administrators, right? This is the one that's really only in the, it's only in the default domain, so you have to have access to the default domain to see it. And it's going to record your changes to the configuration, right? So if someone changes something in one domain, then you would be able to go in here and see what they changed. So if you needed to kind of look for audit purposes to say, okay, or if a developer says, well, in this domain, this was working yesterday, how come it's not working now, right? You can check the audit log to see if somebody changed something in that domain, if another developer has access to it. It can, you know, it does help out a lot to determine if that someone has changed something. Now, it won't give you the actual, like, developer username, right? It just changes, tells you what has changed inside that domain. The next one is your XML file capture, which is on slide 20. This is also in the default domain only, and this is malformed XML input, you know, can't be displayed in the multi-step probe, so you can use the XML file capture to view the submitted document. So if you're doing XML processing, transformation, and things like that, a malformed XML input, the probe doesn't really capture that, right? It won't capture that. So this XML file capture will actually let you view the XML documents that took place. So you have to be doing XML stuff, and then you actually have to be in the default domain. So you would need administrator privileges and actually to run this one. Then on style sheet status, which is slide 21, the style sheet status can contain error messages that are useful in identifying exceptions during compilation or execution of a style sheet, right? So there's also the style sheet cache, which, you know, you can determine. So if you use caching, you know, for documents and stuff like that, so this one can be helpful if you need to determine, you know, I didn't get really the output I wanted, but I think it's the old output. So you can go in here and see, you know, what was used and stuff like that. You can flush the cache. You can make it reload the cache and things like that. So this one's, you know, that helpful if you're changing, you know, a lot of things during your running system, right? You can go in here and see what's sort of being used. Then on 22 is your error event code. So you can create filters for the log target based on event codes, right? So if you can double-click on event code, and you get the little pop-up that's down there on the right-hand side that tells you what that event code means. Like, so the one I've got here is can't find configuration object, right? So, and then you can actually set a filter or an event to only log messages when that configured event codes are captured in the log, right? So if you want to tell yourself, well, if I get this, then I want to be notified, then you can go in here and do event filtering, right? So it's kind of helpful if you want to only make sure that when certain errors occur, or if, you know, if you keep seeing the same error over and over, or if you saw an error and then it went away and then it came back, you could go in here and send event filter so that you would know when certain events kind of occur. So the system usage, this is the one that really talks about the load on the box, right? So your how much the load is really the same as memory usage, right? So the device slows down, becomes unresponsive, you can check the memory. You can come in here and see what the CPU usage is. If you've spiked up to 100% and you haven't come back down. If you have a throttle set and the load is too high, and the device might start refusing connections. So that would be the other thing that you would want to make sure is if you do throttle-based settings, that you know what they are, and then you can come in here and look and see what kind of file system information that you have. So if you think the device is all of a sudden really slow to where it wasn't, you can come in here, see what's on that work queue, what kind of load it's got, and see if that might give you an indication of why the box is all of a sudden slower, or, you know, refusing more connections to it. To maybe you need to route it to, you know, start writing stuff to another box, or, you know, give it time to process. Then, so here's a little quick summary, a little table to to help you kind of match up, the available utilities to the purpose of that utility. So match likely solutions to problem areas such as network connection problems might be a routing config issue. An incomplete or unexpected request might be a processing action issue or a back-end server issue. Set up and use the system logs for troubleshooting. You can configure and use a multi-step probe to aid in problem discovery. If you're not really sure where it is, then the probe can help you narrow it down by, doing that step-by-step approach. There is a wide range of troubleshooting debugging tools allowed, so you do kind of want to see if you can figure out where you think there might problem be and then narrow down, which tool might help you. So you might have to use one tool, might not give you enough information, and have to use, a couple tools together to kind of get to where you need to go. So you can get, from a raw packet capture to that message level processing debug. So this table kind of helps you give a little summary on, where you might want to use each tool based upon what you kind of see and what error you're kind of looking for. I am now on slide 25, and this is for, external factors. Like I had mentioned, previously, sometimes if it is that, back-end system or where the device is routing to, you might have to get other parties involved, right? If you're going down to LDAP or TAM or TFIM or MQ or Oracle or DB2 or App Server, you might have to get them involved, right, to see what their log, right? Did they get the message? What was in their log? What they tried to send back that, maybe Daddy Power didn't accept. So, you might have to verify that LDAP is configured right or MQ is configured right or the database was configured correctly. So, you do might have to see other things. So, now on to slide 26. This is a section for hardware. So, stop ringing. There we go. The first set of slides all talked about configuration and firmware, right? So as you step through, you verified all your configuration. If you think your configuration is right, you think it's a problem with firmware, you generate the error reports and then, open a PMR with level 2, let them help you troubleshoot it and determine if there is a bug or something inside the firmware. So once you've kind of sort of narrowed down or narrowed out either configuration or firmware, you might not be to hardware. So this is where the diagnostic steps, when the web GUI doesn't respond, you would want to make sure you can get into the CLI, right, to make sure that the web management shows you what IP address and port you would be using on that. So this is where you would be doing that one. So you want to go through SSH, you would look at it. Then these lists of like five little things are something that if the CLI does work for you but the web GUI doesn't, you can run to see the status of the box from the CLI. So they're kind of some quick little show tools to show you information from the CLI about the state of the system. Now, if you go, okay, well, my CLI didn't respond either, then on page slide 27, it gives you that what you would do next, right? So my web GUI doesn't work, my CLI hasn't been working through SSH, and now is when you might have to get the data center team involved, depending upon where your client sits. This is where you might have to physically touch, see, hear, listen on the box, right? The data power device always comes with the serial cable, so you'll have to connect to the serial cable, then connect it to a laptop, desktop, and log in like that way, like you did, whoever configured the box originally, right, to see if the CLI comes up that way, and maybe the SSH isn't working, or maybe it got disabled. So then you could go in through the serial connection, and it would give you some functionality there. Sometimes you might have to turn the box on and off. Then the box has fans, right, and they're really loud fans. So you want to make sure if you listen for the fans, right, you can hear it's got multiple fans to help keep the box cool, so you can tell if those fans are working. You want to check the power connections, right? There are two redundant power supplies on a data power device. So sometimes it can be easy as, like, swapping them out, right? Maybe the cord went bad, or maybe for some reason the rack that the device was mounted in got jiggled or something. You might want to plug them back in, have that data source person do that, confirm the power switch. Then the box does have lights on it, right? So if you've seen the front of a box, it does have lights. They blink. The Ethernet ports have lights, so you might want to, look to see if there's blinking lights, if the lights are on, if there's no lights at all. And these would all be good things that if you think the box is now bad, right, if you do have a hardware problem and you're going to have to open that PMR to get that box replaced, these would all be things you would want to tell the support person that you've done, that you swap this out, you check this, you turn it off and on. These are the lights, you know, they were blinking, they weren't blinking, they were blinking really fast, they were blinking slow. That sort of information is all really helpful to support in trying to help you determine if you're having a hardware problem. So that takes me to slide 28. I will briefly go over a quick scenario. My scenario actually uses MQ. So this is where I had an input message from a get queue that I wanted to pass it asynchronously to another queue, right? So I wanted to ensure that my service, basically, it never sent a reply back. So so this is kind of the picture that it depicts at the bottom. The red X is basically, this is what I did not want the device to do, right? I wanted to take the queue, I wanted to go through the device, put on a put queue, and I did not want to send that reply back. So on 30, this was the topology I had set up. I had a multi-protocol gateway, had a back-end URL. I had MQ front-side handlers with a queue manager name and name. I had a policy that had a match action and a results action. And instead of using processing actions, I actually used the header injection parameters, so to try to make sure that I wouldn't send that reply back. So 31, this was the actual after I ran a test, and then this was the actual error that I received. So I checked my system log, didn't get the response I wanted, or basically got no response at all. And I checked, and I actually had an error, right? So it says MQ Manager Error, Reason Code 2051. And I was like, I wonder what could be wrong. So I verified my object status. That was where I went first, to make sure my multi-protocol gateway and all the objects inside that gateway were up, right? My front-side handler was up, my XML manager was up, to see that, you know, okay, what if my front-side handler was down, then that would indicate why, you know, something didn't route right. So everything looked up from the data power side, so I went over and looked at the MQ on the back end, right? So this is where I had to go over MQ. If you happened to didn't know the back end, you might, you know, had to get MQ involved, or, you know, LDAP, wherever you're kind of going. And but what I noticed when I got over to MQ was my put queue was down. So I enabled my back end put queue. I reran the test, and my test ran successfully, right? The test went over, it put it on the MQ, and then no reply was sent back to where the original one was sent. So that was just a quick little scenario to demonstrate kind of using the system log and then kind of verifying the object status. So now to go into resources. There are lots of resources available to help you kind of, you know, ask sort of questions to see what's out there. There's a data power support site, which does provide a lot of good, helpful information. There is a must gather, so when you do have to open that PMR to support, it tells you exactly what you need to provide. Then tech notes, right? I list the one here for the URL for this one is for troubleshooting, but the tech notes off the main support site, there are lots of tech notes, right, whether you used them for other IBM products or not. Tech notes, they're, you know, where customers found a certain set of problems, or if they think, if support gets a lot of questions about a certain piece of information inside the documentation, they might write a tech note to expand a little bit more. So they can be really useful. So if you have a certain problem, go out and search tech notes, right? Maybe there is a tech note that was previously written that can help you solve your problem quickly. The other place to go is IBM Developer Works. There is a data power section out there, and this Developer Works goes for Zones Business Integration is where data power is. You can search all of Developer Works, or you can kind of narrow your search down to more of where data power is. And you can see there are four new red books or red papers that have come out on data power that are really helpful for configuration and management of the device. And there's also other ones that, you know, a lot of different people have written out there on Developer Works. Also on Developer Works, you'll find a public forum, right? So this is where you can post a question, internal IBMers answer it to other customers. You can see what other customers have put out there, maybe another customer is hitting the same problem you are. So those are all some really good, you know, wealth of information for you to sort of, you know, search over to see if you can kind of help solve your problem. Then this is, on slide 35, a list of all the product publications that are available, right? And they are on your firmware and documentation download site. So if you've downloaded firmware before or one of the PDFs that go with the documentation, these are all the different ones that are available for you. And that top bullet gives you the link. And so there's an example. There's a web GUI guide, common installation guide, the CLI reference guide that I mentioned before. The release notes tell you what's in each fix pack that comes out. So if you want to know what was in, you know, fix pack 4 or whatever, you can go and read the release notes for that. If you have to upgrade your firmware, there's the Contivo Analyst Guide. There's always the WTX guides also out there. There's the Eclipse plugin. There's an XML Spy plugin. So all of those kind of publications for the Data Power Box are out on this firmware and documentation download site. That is the end of the presentation. So, Elijah, I will turn it over to you now to see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Christy. For a great presentation.
Our first question comes from Greg Boshin.
Yes, I was wondering if there were any resource considerations about running packet capture in production.
Yeah, generally you run the packet capture for a short duration, right? I mean, usually you have to take a network. So it's not really a resource contention. I mean, if you had to run it for a really long time, right, you just run the risk of that PCAP filling up your file storage space. So you generally want to, you know, start it and then stop it as soon as you've kind of gotten the information that you wanted.
Okay. Yeah, we're trying to track down some Java.net, that socket timeout exception that
right.
happens sporadically in production. So it's kind of like we don't know when it's going to happen. So
right.
I was wondering if I could leave it running and then stop it once it happens.
You can. You can leave it running. You just want to make sure you manage it by, like, file size and things like that. So
just set the size so it doesn't fill up the
file. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. And we'll take a question from Chuck Meyer.
Hi. I had a question about offloading the system logs.
Okay.
I know there's several different options for putting the logs to an external source, which is great because I know there's not a lot of storage on the box. We saw in the documentation that it looks like syslog is an option, and also it appears network file stores are. However, it seems like in our version of the firmware that's not an option. Is this in newer versions of the firmware?
It should be in all 3.6.0 and 3.6.1. So, I mean, I don't, you know, if you're 3.5.0 or 3.5.1, I'd have to verify. I know 3.6.0 and 3.6.1, it, you know, it's fully supported. So.
Okay. Because we are in 3.6.0.
Okay.
It doesn't appear in the NFS doesn't appear in the drop-down that we see. Maybe there's something you need to set up ahead of time?
It might be. That would probably be a quick, you know, easy answer. I'm not done it recently, so it can't really come off the top of my head. But, you know, there should be. You could probably quickly ask support, you know, make sure on the NFS stuff. It might be something that you have to have particular permissions or you know, something set up pre-fort for you in order to see it.
Good. And if the logs do roll to an external source, does that mean that they're no longer available for generating a report?
No, what's available on the generate report is what's currently on the box, right? So the box writes to the log and then writes to what's on the box, right? And then it rolls off box, right? So when you run the error report, it captures the one that is currently on the device.
Okay. So typically you just want to make sure that you reproduce right before you generate your report.
Right. So if you do roll off box and it, you know, and you've got one that's off box, and you would just want to make sure you send that system login.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And as a final reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. And it appears that we have no further questions. Mr. Robertson, I turn the call back over to you for additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Port Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be on the site in the next day or two. And I just want to say thanks for joining us today, and thank you, Christy, for presenting today.